He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern about, I don't know, wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how does that Medicaid thing work, you know, mom's in the nursing home and they're telling us it's, the state of Michigan says it's $7,032 per month. That number's due to go up in December. That's just the number they come up with every December, they tell us. Okay, for the next year, it's going to cost, on average, $7,032, and next year it'll be a different number. So we're just a couple months away from finding out for 2013 how much that's going to be. But right now, $7,032, that's a lot of money. Don't have that in the loose change in the couch, right? So how are we going to pay for that? Well, there's an answer. Give us a shout at 888-463-2843 if you'd like to know. We also deal with real estate and business law. So if you're looking at buying or selling a home, you're wondering what is that owner financing all about? Is the lease option, the land contract, the mortgage, the promissory note? How does all that stuff work? Well, easy to we try to make it easy to find out. 888-463-2843. That's 888-GO-DAVID. And we'll get you on the air right now. If you're looking at starting a business, stopping a business, running a business, what have you, now's the time to give us a shout. 888-463-2843. Had a situation in the office this past week, which, all right, let me, confession time, right? I mean, I've only been doing this for 8 or 9 years or so. I don't really know how many years we've been doing this show, so maybe you already have an idea about this, but anyway, here's the deal. I'm a fixer, right? If I got a problem, I like to get it fixed. I like to have a solution. And, you know, it's not always my solution, but some solution, for crying out loud, you know? And there is many solutions as there are people who walk through the door. The one thing that does frustrate me a little bit, I have to say this, is when the... sometimes the solution is simply, here are the tools that you need to make decisions for yourself. I mean, I don't know what answers you're going to come up with, right? But I do know that right now you can't give the answers. Here's the situation. Parent is in long-term care. There's no money, okay? $0. But there are a couple of life insurance policies that mom or dad have been paying on for many, many years, all right? Those are the Ed McMahon policies, you know what I mean? The celebrity endorser, and mom decided, okay, what the heck, I might as well pay, you know, $5.99 a week for the rest of my life in order to get, $50 worth of life insurance, whatever it was. Anyway, over the years, of course, the $5.99s a week or whatever the heck it was adds up, and pretty soon, mom has got too much cash value in the policy to qualify for Medicaid. You know, mom's in her 90s. Mom or dad. Mom or dad is in their 90s. Severe disability, debility, you know, unable to make decisions, you know, the whole nine yards. And been living in the subsidized apartment, you know. So what's the plan? So they call and say, well, you know, here we were told this, that, and the other thing about these policies. They say, come on in. You know, and we'll squeeze you in. It's not like I need lunch anyway, you know. So, okay, come on in. We take a look at that. Okay. Well, you know, here are some options for you. You could do this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. I want to make sure that the funeral gets paid, which I get. You know, I understand that. But you know, we've got to get rid of the money. And the fact of the matter is that there was one. See, Michigan allows you to keep a policy if the face value, total face value on your policies is less than $1,500, $1,500. If the face value, total face value, that's the amount of insurance that they say on the face of the policy. If it's less than $1,500, $1,500, it doesn't matter what the cash value is. That policy is excluded, all right? Off the table, don't worry about it. And we got one of those. But then we've got another one where, you know, the face value is like, I don't know, $5,000, $6,000, whatever it is. And the cash value there is higher, and so, yeah, it's pretty clear mom's going to be disqualified. So what do we do about that? Well, my sense of the thing is, look, let's put this one over with the funeral home, right? See, what they'll tell you, and by they I mean social workers typically, and other well-meaning folk, is they will tell you, oh, you need to cash this policy in, or you need to borrow against the cash value to bring the cash value down. Either one of those techniques is not a bad idea, right, if you've got the time. But you know insurance companies, they're more than happy to take your check, but sending it out is a different matter, especially if we're dealing with surrender of a policy or a loan against the policy, you know, pull down that cash value. You know, you're talking a 6 to 8 week proposition right there. Mom's in the nursing home now. We need to get her qualified now. Mom or dad is in the nursing home right now. I mean, we need to get that person qualified for the Medicaid. We need to do it now. We need to get rid of that policy. And cashing it in, which was, you know, what was proposed, you know, that's a, like I say, that's a 6 week process. Maybe more. Who knows? Maybe they don't like your power of attorney. Oops, we don't even have a power of attorney. Okay, great. Let's go get a conservatorship out of the probate court. All right. That's the thing. There's no paperwork here at all. Nothing. No power of attorney. No will. No nothing. We got the kid designated as the beneficiary in these life insurance policies, and that's it. So my frustration came from, first of all, okay, well, if we do this with this and then keep you as the beneficiary on that, then when this thing pays off, now you've got, you know, the little bit of money that's in this policy, but you've got control of it. Well, I want to make sure the funeral is all taken care of. Okay, I'm fine with that, but you're telling me that mom's got a little bit of cash over here, right? Why don't we use that to pay the funeral? And then you've got some options. The kid has some options. When the money gets paid off, which is free and clear of mom's obligations, now you have, you know, that's the way life insurance is. You know, it doesn't matter what the deceased person owned or owed, right? That life insurance policy passes free and clear of the debts of the decedent. All right? You get that money anyway. So now you can decide, well, am I going to pay the funeral, or, you know, I'm going to fly in Aunt Millie from the coast to be there for the, you know, the point is you've got options. You've got some choices there. Do you see? And finally, and at last, you know, the bottom line was, look, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do this. I'll just cash in the policy. And, you know, I'm pulling out what's left of my hair. I'm saying, look, if you do that, then here are the consequences. These are not good consequences. And finally I said, look, we just need to, at a minimum, just let me do powers of attorney. All right, let me put together some, I'm not going to go, in this case, you know, there's no fee involved. So it's like, you know, it's just a pro bono, you know, whatever. You just need it. You know, just get the powers of attorney done. Oh, I've already got a will. I get that you have a will. The will is not going to help you. What you need, and this is true for everybody, the bottom line is, if you don't have your powers of attorney in place, okay, if you don't have, and you need to be very clear about this, if you don't have powers of attorney that are designed, intended, the point of which is to get you qualified for this stuff, right? If you don't have that kind of power of attorney in place, and believe me, 90% of the powers of attorney that I see across my desk that other folks, you know, got online or however, you can't use them because they're not designed, they're not intended to get you qualified for the assistance that you may need. They're not. That was not the point of doing that power of attorney, and it reflects it in the power of attorney, right? So, anyway, bottom line was we finally basically, I don't say force them, we didn't force, but, you know, it was like, please, just wait, you know, it'll take us, you know, an hour or so maybe to get these documents put together, okay? Just please, let us get the documents put together, and you can take them to the hospital and, you know, round up. Well, how am I going to get witnesses? I'll bring my kids. You can't bring your kids. They're family members, all right? You just go next door and have somebody sign them. And eventually that's what happened. But I haven't heard back, and I don't expect to. But you know what I mean? It's kind of frustrating when there's a when there's a solution, which is not a complete solution, I'm not telling him what he has to do, right? But just to give, just put the tools in your hands. That can be a little frustrating. And that was, if you care about my week, that was my frustration this week. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Give us a call, why don't you, at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get you right on the air. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, comment, or concern, now's the time to call 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843 or 888-GO-DAVID if you like to, you know, hunt and peck for the little letters on your telephone keypad. You know, it's a brilliant marketing move to say 888-GO-DAVID. I know it. I thought it up. Of course, nobody ever, I don't think anybody ever does the GO-DAVID thing. But anyway, it's there. What are we talking about? Oh, here's the thing. The basics. You know, it's the whole, you know, here's a glimpse into my world, all right? The whole lead a horse to water, can't make him drink kind of problem. You know, and it's really a, and that'd be interesting, you know, and I'd be, frankly, I'd be very interested to hear, because from anybody who had, you know, from your side of the desk, right, your side of the table, we don't actually use desks in the office, we don't, you know, it's just in the conference room is the only place we ever meet folks, but anyway, you know, sometimes you can see pretty clearly. If not what ought to happen, you know, at least what the options are. And of course that's, I think probably the biggest part of what we do is to tell folks, look, here's the 23 things you can do, or here are the 23 things you could have done, and here are the 5 things that are left, and here's the 2 things that seem to me to make some sense. Because I do like to fix it, you know, and for me, fixing it is all about choice, is all about, you know, freedom, liberty. You know, you made certain choices in your life. You chose to live your life in a certain way. And this is the vast majority of my folks, my clients, who, you know, you lived your life in a certain way, meaning, you know, when 7 o'clock rolls around, you know, you don't push the snooze button again. You say, okay, I guess I got to get up. And you get up and you drag your carcass to the line or to the store or to the office or wherever it is you drag your carcass to, and you do what you need to get done. You know, you work and you spend less than you have coming in, right? You like this weird thing called saving. Maybe even your 401k or IRA, you invest, right? And most of my folks, the ones who are on Social Security, I don't hear them bellyaching. What I see is that they're saving. They're on Social Security, right? And they're not crying about, oh, I didn't get to go to the casino this weekend. Meh. No, they're actually saving, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a month still. Okay? And when you behave that way, when you do those things, when you pay it off, when you pay cash, you know, the old, what was the old thing? Use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. That was, I don't think that's just a New England thing. I'm pretty sure it isn't. You know, Cape Cod, that was my grandmother's, my Irish grandmother. I mean, that was her thing. You know, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. Simple as that. And most folks who live that way, okay, they have something. They've built something up. They've saved for the rainy day, okay? And the end of lifetime, that last, you know, maybe 5 years or so, that can be a very expensive time. And it seems to me that those decisions that were made should have consequences, all right? That those decisions that were made over the last 50, 60 years to use it up, wear it out, make it do without, save your money, you know, rainy day, that all those things, those should have consequences. And good consequences, right? Good consequences should flow from those value-based decisions that you made. And what's the value? Value is earn your own way, earn your own keep, make it happen for yourself, you know, personal responsibility, delayed gratification, you know, all those things your mom taught you. and your dad, too, sometimes at the end of the switch. But anyway, that's what people have done. That's what most of my folks have done, most of my clients. And it seems to me that those choices should have consequences. It's a little bit frustrating for me sometimes when, you see, you know, if you had the tools in place, if you put the tools in place, and by tools I mean it could be anything from trusts. I mean, wills are useful sometimes. You know, there's room for all the tools in the toolbox. Sooner or later, you're going to use all of them in a given situation. You know, and whether it's powers of attorney or healthcare power of attorney, financial power of attorney, you know, the trusts, the wills, deeds. I mean, all these things, we use all of them, assignment document, all these things can be very useful. It's just that they have to be used correctly. And the key is options. The key is how do you provide options to folks? So I'm not the one telling you that here's the way you've got to do it or here's the way, you know, here's how you've got to spend your money. That is not my point. My point is you should be the one or the person that you pick. You know, number one, it's your stuff. You should be the boss of your stuff as long as you can be. That's rule number one. We never deviate from rule number one, which is why we don't put the kids on the deed and we don't put them on the bank account. We don't put them on the CDs. We don't put the kids on anything because it goes away, detracts from rule number one, which is it's your stuff. You should be in charge of it. But there are tools that need to be in place in order for you to take charge of it, okay? So that if you're not able to be the boss, then you know who's going to be, and you have a plan for that. And the thing that, it doesn't frustrate me when people make choices that would be different than what I would think would be optimal. I'm fine with that. The only thing that kind of razzes me is when people will not take that responsibility. They say, well, I don't want the tools. It's like, okay, how about for free? just hang around long enough to have another cookie and a cup. I just take it, please. And you know, and that was the situation last week. It was like, look, I can't pay you to take the documents, but you know, you almost get to that point sometimes. So get your tools in place, put the tools in the toolbox so that, you know, when you can't be the boss of your stuff, you know who's going to be. You have some sort of idea what's going to happen at that point. You're listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to one of our life plan workshops. See, you think we'd get past a whole half hour and not talk about the life plan workshops? Ha! Take a shot. give us a call at the same number, 888-463-2843, or sign up online, DavidCarrierLaw.com, to come to one of the free life plan workshops where we go into this stuff a little bit more in depth, if you can believe that. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, scary or not, about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do we handle the high cost of long-term care and how do I sell my house in this environment, how do I keep my business going, how do I stop a business, start a business, or just, you know, maintain an even strain, well, now's the time for you to give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And of course, we love to get the emails. David at davidcarrierlaw.com. That's the way to send us an email. Send me an email. I don't know. Send us an email, yes. The royal we. Anyway, give us a shout that way. And if you want to get on over to the website, that's easy to do also. That's davidcarrierlaw.com. All one, you know, just run them all together. We don't use spaces, underlines, or anything else like that. Just davidcarrierlaw.com, and you'll see where the life plan workshops are, when they are. And hey, you know, if you're here in West Michigan and you feel like it tomorrow on Monday morning, I probably shouldn't be using specific days, but anyway, we do the 8 West show. So, you know, check your local listings for 8 West. We're going to be doing frequently asked questions there. And we just started doing Take 5 as well over on Channel 13. So if you like to follow those, you can, you don't feel like, you know, if you want to see what I look like, that's kind of easy to do. Life Plan Workshop. You know, I always get at least one person at the Life Plan where, hey, I wanted to see what you look like every morning. Well, here I am, you know, not much to it. But also on, like I say, on 8 West and on Take 5, we do those shows on at least a monthly basis. You know, sometimes more often, but monthly is sort of typical. Anyway, give us a call, 888-463-2843. Drop us an email. Love to see you there. Now, question, do I need, and I'll get to some of the emails here, do I need to get a real estate attorney? Mother-in-law sold my husband her house for $1 8.5 years ago, and 7.5 years ago, they took out a mortgage on the house. So mom sold them the house 8 years ago, and then a year later, they took out the mortgage. This year, they moved into the house with the mother-in-law. After being here 6 months, mother-in-law has decided she don't want us here, and my husband's daughter said she's going to get a lawyer and get the house back in her grandma's name. Can she do this? You know, probably not. You know, this is one of those it's my stuff, I'm the boss situations, okay? Why did mother-in-law sell the house for a dollar to her kid? Well, you know, under the tax code, she didn't sell it, right? She didn't sell the house. What she did was what we call a part sale, part gift. She sold part of the house for a dollar, and she gave the rest of it to him. Are you with me on that? I mean, pretty obviously. I mean, lots of times people, oh, I'm going to sell it for a dollar, and that's a sale. No, it isn't. Not in the real world. Not in the real world. Not in the tax world. Not in the Medicaid world. There's no world in which it's true that you buy a house for a dollar. Unless it's in Detroit, in which case it probably is worth less. You know, Newsweek sold for a dollar. I guess there are things that cost less than a dollar. But anyway, point being, you know, what can you do about it now? And the answer is not much. Not much, because a gift is a gift. You know, you sign that deed, and especially when you recite consideration like you did, you know, you did it for a dollar. Now, you want to challenge it 8 years later, almost 9 years later? Good luck for that. You know, now, there could be circumstances. You know, my assumption here is that, you know, that mom is happy, healthy, and all the rest. Maybe not particularly happy, but she's healthy, you know, mentally composed, or at least she was 7.5 years ago. If that's the case, you know, it's darn tough to unwind these things. Now, the way that we've actually had, we've actually had a couple dozen cases like this, and the way I attack them is not like there was a, you know, lots of times people will argue, oh, there was a contract for services. You know, mom signed the house over for a dollar because you were supposed to provide certain personal care services. You didn't provide those services, therefore you breached the contract, therefore we get the house back. Are you with me on that? The idea, the way these things are usually attacked is that there was a contract, okay? And that loses. I've never seen that theory win. But the way we've always gone at it, which so far we've always won, is that mom created a trust at that time, okay? Because, you know, to have a trust, you don't need to have, you know, that thick stack of documents, okay? I mean, a trust can arise out of just the relationship of the parties. You know, the law can impose a trust. And usually what's happening in a case like this where you sell the house for a dollar, usually what's happening is mom is saying, okay, it's my house, but I'm going to transfer the title to you so that when I die, we don't have to transfer the title at that time. Okay, we don't have to transfer the title at that time. Or, you know, they do a joint tenants with rights of survivorship, that kind of thing. So the idea is I get to live in my house for now, and later on, you can have it. But, you know, implicit in that, and usually explicit in that, is if I want it back, you've got to give it back to me. Okay, so if you go on that theory, right? That there was no actual transfer here. I didn't really transfer ownership. What I did was I just, you know, did this paperwork so that you could get it after I died. If that's what's going on, then I get to say I want it back. Are you with me on that? So in a case like this, though, where you sold it 8.5 years ago, you did recited the consideration, unless you can come forward with something like that, okay, and say, hey, you know, I didn't mean that they could really have it, okay? What I meant was, you know, you could hold it for me, you know, unless you can come up with testimony to that. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Then you're in trouble. And I would think in this case, where you're trying to hold on to the house, the fact that you mortgaged it 7 years ago, you know, question, what did mom know you mortgaged it 7 years ago? And what kind of paperwork went into that mortgage? You know, did you take a mortgage on a second property? Was it just collapse? And if we're talking 7, 8 years ago, you know, think about the kooky, really kooky real estate market at that point. You know, they'd loan you money on your doghouse. So who knows? You know, who knows what the paperwork looks like? But that's what we'd have to see. Can she get the house back in grandma's name? Maybe. I wouldn't bet on it, though. I mean, that's one of those things where it's going to be pretty tough. This is why you never put anybody on the deed unless you actually mean to give it to them. And if that's not what you mean, it better not be what you're saying. Because it's just sort of basic common sense, isn't it? Mean what you say what you mean, right? I mean, if you mean to give the house to the kid, well, then sign a deed that says I'm giving the house to the kid. If you don't mean to give the house to the kid, right? Why are you signing paperwork that says that's what you're doing? Because this is the sort of thing that happens. You know, now the kid takes out the mortgage. Okay, let's say they, you know, and real estate values have come down. Let's say the house is worth less than the mortgage amount. Okay, and now, you know, granddaughter goes against her, you know, Sue's father and all this, right? Sue's father and mother, I guess. Says husband's daughter, so I'm guessing that it's not her kid. It's not the wife's kid, you know. So your stepdaughter now sues you and your husband and her father. Well, okay. What are the chances that the husband and the stepmother, what are the chances they're going to continue to pay the mortgage? Right? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Now the bank takes grandma's house. Right? So you just, you know, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. And, you know, this is not deception, but Jiminy Crickets, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice law. Practice law without a license. That's not exactly practicing law without a license, but it comes close. You know, you run into this time and time again with deeds. We just had a family in last week. You know, the whole family farm. It's in multiple parcels. And they deeded two of the parcels over to one of the kids. And then because a title office, you know, somebody at the title company drew up one of the deeds, that one screwed up. So the family, get this, family farm, all the kids are living in various houses all over the farm. Okay? You know, got the big house, got the little house, got the this house and that house. And I've got a minute left. So when we get back, I will tell you all about the family that lives together, stays together, right? Not always. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call at 888-463-2843, 888-463-2843, and we'll get you right on the air. We've got Joe from GR on the line. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm getting ready to sell a home and wondering, is a land contract going to be the best option? The city that the home is in has requirements for inspections and application fees for renting, so I don't know that a lease option would be a nice option for me. So I thought I'd pick your brain on that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, of course, we like the lease option. The reason, let's just go down the, kind of go down the list. I mean, why a lease option versus land contract? And the three ways of financing the sale, one is a mortgage and promissory note. That's conventional, right? The problem with it is it takes forever to get the house back. If you're the seller and you're taking back the mortgage and a promissory note, if the person doesn't pay on the promissory note, well, now you've got to go through that whole foreclosure thing. You've got to give them 6 months in the house, yakety yak. So it's a, it can be a real, you know, that can be a nightmare. The thing with the land contract is that there is still this equity of redemption. You know, if they come in 90 days and they just make up the land contract, and if they paid more than 50% on the land contract, now they've got 180 days to come in, and all they have to do is catch up the back payments, and that will reinstate the land contract. Now, in the land contract, you typically write in that if they don't make payment for 15 days after you give them a notice of forfeiture, then the land contract is forfeited. That's what it says, but it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really work that way. I mean, that's what you say in the land contract, but it doesn't work that way. Instead, you know, as I say, if they just make up the payments, now the land contract's reinstated, and if they're late the next month, now you get to start the whole merry-go-round all over again. So, land contract can be kind of a tough deal. Now, with the lease option, it's true, it has to, the rental property has to meet rental requirements. You know, it has to be up to snuff to pass muster as a rental property. But that's what you do. You lease it to the buyer, and you say, okay, so long as you make the rent payments, which just so happen to be the same as the mortgage payments or land contract payments would have been, then every month that goes by and you make your payment on time, the price goes down a little bit. And if at any point you want to just pay cash in the amount of that reduced option price, okay, well, then you can cash out the lease option. So those are the three choices. And, you know, the thing is, Joe, if you've got a good buyer who's got solid, you know, got solid credit history and all the rest, well, if you do, then why aren't they mortgaging the thing, right? Why aren't they just cashing you out? But the other thing is you've got to be very, very picky about who it is that you choose to extend the land contract to, because, you know, now you're in bed with them as long as you, you know, as long as they're making payments. So, I mean,
right.
How much work has to be done to bring it up to code?
Oh, it's, you know, honest to goodness, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm guessing probably $8,000 worth of work.
Yeah. And what's the value of the property?
Oh, it's that'd be, $25,000.
Yeah. So you got to put a third more into it just to be able to work the land contract thing. So, and who is the, do you have a potential purchaser in mind?
I don't at this point. I'm just trying to plan ahead a little bit on the best way to move the property.
You know, that sounds to me like one of those situations where doing the you know, and this is why I say there's a purpose for every tool in the toolbox, right? You know, is land contract the preferred method? No, it's not the preferred method, but in a given situation, is the land, you know, is it a useful tool? And the answer is, yeah. I mean, if you've got to put $8,000 into a what will ultimately be a $25,000 property, what did you pay for the thing, if I could ask?
$10,000.
Yeah, okay. So now you've got $18,000 invested, right? And now your maximum profit, you know, and after transaction, you know, you put the $8,000 into it, and after transaction costs, you'd be lucky to break even.
Right.
Right? So you really have to sell it. You can't do a lease option because you can't afford to bring it up to code to rent it out. Because, you know, when you do that, the whole Landlord-Tenant Relations Act, that all kicks in. And you have the obligations of as a straight-up landlord, you know, provide heat and, you know, all those other requirements. So, you know, this sounds like it might be a situation where doing the land contract is the better part of valor. Well, what do you think?
Okay.
You know,
that's the one that I bought and sold properties with land contracts in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And true enough, I mean, they can be a pain in the butt sometimes, but I just didn't see another option. I thought I would talk with an expert, somebody who knows more than me, and see what your thoughts are.
Well, you know, I think you might be going down, and, you know, especially if you've done it before. You know, one of the things that I'm always afraid of is that I'm talking to somebody, you know, who got the CDs or DVDs and got the workbook, you know, and now all of a sudden they're a real estate investor and really has very little idea what they're getting into. But if it's the sort of thing that you're the, you know, you've been doing this before, you're, you know, you got your feet on the ground, so you, you know, I mean, for someone such as yourself, it's really, it's a calculated risk, but it's not the insanity that somebody who, you know, took the course is going to be getting themselves into. And then I don't, you know, just preaching to the choir, you just need to qualify these people six ways to Sunday.
Right.
Direct deposit and escrow accounts and the whole bit, and then make sure you got enough down. You know, the other thing, and this is more for other folks than for you, lots of times when people do these, they'll say, well, you know, it needs X amount of work, and so you're going to work off part of the purchase price by performing this work. And people agree to do that, and then you never check on them. You know, I mean, the seller never checks to make sure that the work gets done. And as a result, a year later, they're disappointed, or 2 years later, they're disappointed when what was left of the copper is ripped out of the walls and none of the supposed repairs were ever done. So, you know, it's just a matter of monitor the thing, get the agreement in writing, mean what you say what you mean, and then just monitor the performance. Like Reagan said, you know, trust but verify. And that's really what you need to. I realize I'm kind of preaching to the choir to you, but you know, if you don't hold people accountable, shame on you.
Right. Okay.
Okie doke.
Well, I appreciate your advice.
No problem. Thanks for calling. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. We've got just 30 seconds left. So Diane from Kentwood. Diane, you want to just tell us what you're calling about? We'll get to you right after the break.
Find out about 123 lump sum out of Florida. They buy annuities and take a percentage of. Anytime you have any kind of stocks, bonds, investments, they buy the whole thing out, life insurance, whatever. And I had something sent to me in the mail yesterday.
Okay, I tell you what. When we get back from the break, we'll talk about that. And it's not just this one company out of Florida. You know, you got the JG Wentworths or whatever they're, you know. The Dewey Cheatham House of the financial world. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.